chapter 13, verse number 10, where our lesson is found this evening. And I don't didn't get a new battery for my clicker, so they're going to have to click upstairs. So I appreciate them doing that, and hopefully they'll be able to follow along pretty good. But let me say something about this lesson. This is what we might call the good posture lesson. It's going to make us all want to sit up straight because we're talking about the woman who was bent over and could not straighten up for 18 years. And you know, I believe as you get into my sermons, and I think it's good to try to understand your sermon and put yourself in the text and try to think about the emotions of the person. But this sermon, it almost went too far. The Lord yesterday played a mean trick on me. Yesterday I got back in bed. I'd taken Austin to go hunt with Cody Ray, and I got back and went back to bed as any good father would. Took his son to hunt and then jumped back in bed. But anyways, and I coughed, and somehow it caused my neck to lock up the muscles in my neck, and it like sent spasms down my neck and back. And I could not get out of bed. Amanda had to help lift me up after laying there for like an hour trying to get in these different positions and oils and Biofreeze. And I had this horrible crick in my neck and was very stiff moving like this and struggling to straighten up any yesterday. It's worked its way out and I have felt fine today. But I thought, all right, I couldn't hardly go one day, you know, without being able to straighten up. And couldn't turn my neck without moving my body. And that's our story. You remember that? Have you had the same thing happen to you? Where you have a horrible crick in your neck or your back's so hurt you can't straighten up? Now imagine doing that for 18 years. 18 years. I don't know what it was like before and what caused her to do this. Maybe she got back in bed and moved the wrong way. I think it was more serious than that. Maybe she was in some kind of accident. Maybe she lifted too much weight, or it could be thought of as this condition that we will speak of in a moment that actually involves over time the fusion of the spinal cord. But this lady had this condition where she could not straighten up, and for 18 years. And some people it's more pronounced like this, but then some people, as the picture shown, it even can be more like this. And in the Greek text, it's kind of more like a U shape. This is a curve, and she could not unbend herself. She could not straighten herself up, is the idea. And so in Luke 13, we read about this lady who was in the synagogue, and behold, there was a woman, verse 11, who had a disabling spirit. Some versions say she was crippled. She was crippled for 18 years. She was bent over and could not fully straighten herself. Notice that in verse 10 and 11 that her bondage involved a disability. This term in the ESV is translated disability, but it means weakness in some versions. It is translated some 24 times in the New Testament, and sometimes it's translated as weakness. And it's most often used to refer to physical infirmities. Sometimes, though, it's a specific sickness or disability. Sometimes it's just to human frailty in general. For example, Paul in 1 Corinthians 2:3 speaks of coming to Corinth with much weakness. And in 2 Corinthians 10:5 and 9, Paul talks about that he had overcoming weaknesses that are made strong in Christ, and that it's through his weaknesses that he sees the strength of Christ in 2 Corinthians 10. And that's the same term. It's a crippling, it's a disability, it's a weakness. Literally in the Greek, it is without strength. She didn't have strength. She was weak. This condition of the woman involved her being crooked or bent over. Apparently, she could have at one time straightened up, but she had succumbed to this condition. Now, this condition is thought by commentators and scientists today as spondylitis ankylopeptica. I guess that's how you pronounce it. I'm sure someone could do it better than I did. But it's a spinal condition where, because of inflammation and arthritis, the spine begins to fuse together and movement is reduced, and the condition is painful and is often very uncomfortable, and not, if once it gets to a very bad case, it's often irreversible without surgery or something of that nature. Of course, all of us have seen things like this. My grandfather had bone cancer, and he got in his 80s, and he became, the last couple years of his life, he got very much stooped over. I think of a sweet lady here that passed away in the last couple years, Miss Elsie Youngblood. And you remember Miss Elsie, the last few years of her life, suffered from, might not have been this exact medical condition, but it's the same thing this lady was dealing with, of not being able to straighten up. And certainly you can think of people, and as all of us, I guess to a certain extent, age, our spine tends to do that, and that's why we think about good posture and all those things. But this lady had experienced this condition so that her spine was fused and she could not straighten herself up. And notice that Jesus then in verses 12 and 13 is going to heal her. When Jesus saw her, he called her over and he said to her, "Woman, you are freed from your disability." That's our same word again. From your weakness. You're freed from your disability, your crippling nature. And he laid his hands on her, and immediately she was made straight, and she glorified God. Notice that Jesus heals her in this way. He first sees her and has compassion upon her. He calls her. He speaks to her, and he lays her hands upon her. Notice that you have this sequence of events that shows Jesus' care, and he's speaking as a rabbi to a woman and to a disabled or crippled woman. And so first of all, he notices her in the scene. He speaks to her. He calls her over. And then finally, he shows his love by touching her to heal her. And so Jesus' healing shows his compassion in this countercultural treatment of women. And he frees her. He looses her from the bondage of this disability. She was freed, and she glorified God immediately. He says, "Woman, you are freed." You're loosed, is the idea. No longer is this disabling spirit crippling you. Notice in verses 14 and 15, or in verse 14, you have the synagogue's ruler's objection to this. The synagogue ruler, who had been there for the sermon and was listening to Jesus, had a problem with this. And the ruler of the synagogue, indignant because Jesus had healed on the Sabbath, said to the people, "There are 6 days on which work ought to be done. Come on those days and be healed, not on the Sabbath day." What an ironic objection to this miracle. He says, you know, never mind that somebody was just healed and that great miracle was done, and trying to explain how Jesus could do that. Never mind that we have someone who had been crippled for 18 years who's now been healed and we should be celebrating. But he says, hey, there's 6 other days. The problem is Jesus did, quote, work, breaking the Pharisees' legal traditions. Jesus did work, and therefore, he says, Jesus is violating the Sabbath laws. And those he's afraid of Jesus, it seems. So he attacks the woman and the people, and he says, "You people should not be coming to get healed on the Sabbath day. Shame on you people trying to get healed on the Sabbath day. You got 6 days to do that. Come those other days." Notice the synagogue ruler's objection to this. He did not have concern for the woman, and he didn't think about how the woman was freed and released from her bondage. He was not even moved by the miracle. But then notice in 15 and 16, the response of Jesus. The response of Jesus. Then the Lord answered him, "You hypocrites, does not each of you on the Sabbath untie his ox or his donkey from the manger and lead it away to water it? And ought not this woman, a daughter of Abraham, whom Satan bound for 18 years, be loosed from the bond, from this bond on the Sabbath day?" Notice Jesus calls their action hypocritical. He illustrates it by using the same term that he used in freeing her. You know, if you think about this at first, you may think, well, why did he get to talking about an ox and a donkey, and how does this relate to the woman? Well, it's going back with their tradition. You see, they would tie up, because they didn't have fences and things like that, as we often think of. But they would, you know, had smaller parcels of land, and each of them would have often an animal that they would be very precious to a family. And on the Sabbath day, they would still tie that animal up to keep it so that they could, you know, keep guard on it and keep it there by their house and things like that. But that animal needed to have water on the Sabbath day. Well, this created a problem, because you were not allowed by those Pharisaical traditions to carry water very far. And you also weren't allowed to walk very far to get water. So the well that was down there that everybody went to, you could not walk your animal all the way down there. So they had to come up with different ways to get around this. And they even had rules and different things about loosing and doing work with your animal. And but here's the thing. What Jesus is talking to them about is that they are being hypocritical, because they justified getting around some of those laws because they needed to provide for their livestock. They needed to provide for their livestock. And the idea was that they could have compassion upon their livestock, that it was a just thing to do to take care of their livestock, even if it meant violating some of their Sabbath work laws. Now you get how Jesus is making the point here. Jesus is saying, wait a minute, guys. You mean you can justify breaking your Sabbath laws to provide water for your ox or donkey because you care about your ox or donkey? It means something to you. It is your property. You don't want your ox or donkey suffering on the Sabbath day. And then he hits them right between the eyes. So why do you care? Why don't you care, really, about this woman who is suffering, who is much more valuable than an ox or a donkey? Why don't you care for her and allow her to be healed? Now, you understand that Jesus is certainly not violating any of God's laws regarding work on the Sabbath. And Jesus is the Lord of the Sabbath, as he says in other passages. And that he is only violating their man-made traditions that they had heaped up upon the laws to try to keep this broke. I want to read something as well from a commentator that kind of helps illustrate this. In the Mishnah, it allowed that animals can go out on the Sabbath, but restricts the burdens they can carry, while restricting the kinds of knots they could be tied to on the Sabbath. The rabbis allowed animals to be tied to prevent them from straying on the Sabbath, which could have been, you know, a type of work. They also found ways to water their animals without breaking the limits of Sabbath travel. They would build a crude structure around a public well, converting it into a private residence. Since the well then was now a home, animals could be taken there for watering, provided the greater part of the cow shall be within the enclosure when it drinks, because that's part of their oral tradition. In other words, they would build a little hut there and they'd say, well, we're not going out to work. She's still at home because she's in that little hut. That's their hypocrisy. And Jesus points out the hypocrisy of taking such measures to protect one's property while objecting to the act of human compassion. The woman had been bound by Satan, and Jesus acted to loose it. Remember, I talked about the word loose Jesus said, and I think he's playing a pun on words here, back in verse number 12, he says, "Woman, you are loosed, you are free." Well, now in verse number 15, he talks about animals being loosed. And it's the same word, same idea. He's saying, you don't want this woman loosed, but you're willing to loose your animals. It's pointing to their hypocrisy. Now notice the result in verse 17. The result is his adversaries had no comeback. As he said these things, all his adversaries were put to shame. And all the people rejoiced at all the glorious things that were done by him. They couldn't answer Jesus. They couldn't argue with his assertion. They saw their inconsistency and their hypocrisy. And the people rejoiced at what Jesus was doing and his love for others. Think about this, lady. Now notice, there's three lessons from this text, from this story that I think we can get. I'm sure there's more that you probably may get, but here's three I want to point out. The first one, disabilities are a tool of Satan. Now, it is divided on this text, commentators and biblical students, how exactly this lady was afflicted. It says that she had a disabling spirit in verse number 11, and then it talks about this being put on her by Satan. So some think that she had some type of demonic possession, or that this involved a demon that had possessed her physically, causing her to be stooped over. While others, and I would be an other, I guess, I don't really think that, it doesn't seem to me to be demonic possession. While others seem that this spirit here is just talking about she had a weakness, she had a crippling spirit, not a demonic spirit, but she just had a spirit in the sense of, as the Bible often uses that term in a generic sense. And this disabling spirit, messenger, if you will, was put upon her by Satan. Satan had bound her with it for 18 years. And it seems to me that this is the idea, that it's not that she was demon-possessed. She still had full freedom and faculty of her mind, and as we see some other demon possessions in the New Testament. But rather, she had been afflicted by Satan. Possibly this was just a normal physical affliction like people get today. But Jesus said it was brought on by Satan. Here's the point. Satan brought tremendous pain and suffering and bondage upon her. We see him doing the same thing with Job. You know, we live in a world of pain, suffering, death, and disease. And oftentimes we ask ourselves, why? Why do I have such an affliction? Why do I have to struggle with a crippling disease or a crippling physical disability? Why have I had to deal with some other problem? And we wonder why. Why does someone get cancer? Why is a baby born with child defects or birth defects? Why are there Down syndrome children? Why is someone born blind? Why does someone suffer with back pain while other people don't? Why did I have that spasm on my neck the other morning that it caused me really think about this lady? We wonder all those things, right? Much in a small degree and then much to a large degree. Sometimes the answer is easy. Sometimes it's because of an injury, because of an accident. We live in a world that has physical laws, and if we violate those physical laws, we pay consequences for those laws. Sometimes it's because of poor choices. It's understandable of why someone is dealing with that, because they have made some poor choices that have caused those things. But oftentimes we don't know. We don't know. But this passage says that Satan is a part of the answer. He's not always the answer, but he is part of the answer. God gets blamed for far too much of Satan's chaos. You see, we often, if we suffer with some type of back defect or back problem like this lady has for 18 years, Oftentimes, people will become bitter, maybe even cause them to lose their faith. People get angry, and they blame that crippling disability on God. But notice who Jesus said this is. It was a messenger of Satan, like Paul's thorn in the flesh. It was brought by Satan. We ought to be mad at Satan and realize he can use our disabilities to hold us in bondage. Think about that. He can use the disabilities that we have to hold us captive to our own negative attitudes, our own bitterness, our own resentment, our own blame victim game that we play. We must not let Satan use our weaknesses. We must not let him turn our pain into his triumph. You see, Satan can bind us. He can cripple us. If you think about this term disability, this term weakness, this term crippling, this term without strength, every one of us has some disabilities. Every one of us has some crippling things that we deal with. And, you know, your spouse may be punching you now. I've been telling you, you know, you're disabled. You got some problem. But all of us do, right? Here's the thing. How are we going to handle that? You know, Paul pleaded three times for the Lord to take away the thorn in the flesh that was given to him by Satan. But God told him that His grace was sufficient for him. That it's through that weakness that he is made strong or perfect. You see, how are we going to handle it? Because disabilities are a tool of Satan. And this lady had been bound for 18 years. The next thing, we can notice that we can be the synagogue ruler. We can be the synagogue ruler. The synagogue ruler failed to see the bigger picture. He was blinded by his traditions, by his disdain and hatred for Jesus. He was wrapped up in the human rules so that he could not see the release of the woman. He was mad at Jesus. So instead of being able to see the freedom offered to this woman, he was trying to use the woman to get at Jesus. Since the Sabbath is special and sanctified by God Himself, why should not such a triumph of God over Satan, one which, by the way, will give the woman relief and rest for her affliction, have happened on the Sabbath day? In fact, if you go back and study the Old Testament, Deuteronomy 15, and some of the passages in Leviticus, you'll see that the Sabbath day, and in our Wednesday night class last quarter in the auditorium out here, we studied the Sabbath, and we noticed that the Sabbath day is often connected with release, with loosing things. I don't think there's any coincidence here. Every seventh year, there was a release connected with the Sabbath day. And on the 50th year, which was a Sabbath of rest as well for all the land and the year of Jubilee and things, every seventh year the land was to rest, and on the 50th year it all went back to the original owners. It was a release of all the land, all the debts and things like that. Every seventh year, slaves and indentured servants and things were set free. They were loosed. Now think about that. The land, the people, the slaves were loosed. They were set free on the Sabbath year. I think that what Jesus is saying is significant. That He's doing this work of setting this woman free. And why should it not be the Sabbath day? That's what the Sabbath is about. It's about God's rest. It's about God setting free the captives. This lady was held bondage. She was set free. And so Jesus is not violating the Sabbath, but Jesus is actually helping fulfill the message of the Sabbath, as is consistent with the Old Testament. And so it was proclaimed a release. Now, You and I can be the synagogue ruler anytime we lose focus on the value of people. He didn't care about the working of God in the woman's life. He was interested in the Pharisees' party line. You know, we must care about what God is doing in people's lives. We should care about the spiritual well-being of others. We should care more about souls than sports. We should care more about souls than success. We should care more about souls than money. And people should never be just a number to us. We ought to care about individuals. We ought not get wrapped up in being upset about something going on in the world that allows us to have a bias and a prejudice against someone. This man was so upset about Jesus that he was biased and prejudiced toward this woman who had been released. She had been freed. He did not value the woman. And we can be like that too. And then thirdly, let's suggest, and this is a kind of an interesting point, men, but I'm talking in illustration here about a lesson. We can be the woman in the story. The woman in the story is someone that we can identify with. We each have our disabilities. We have our weaknesses. We have things that make us feel like we're in bondage. And so all of us are crippled, as I was just saying. We have our disabilities. And we need to hear Jesus care for us. Jesus sees us. Jesus calls us. Jesus speaks to us. And Jesus touches us. Think about that. Just like this woman, Jesus reached out to her, each of us. Jesus knows our disabilities. And He reaches out to us. What have you been using as a crutch? What has been holding you under bondage for 18 years? What is your disability? What is Satan using to hold you crippled? You know, Jesus can set us free. I know that many of you, like myself, admire Sandy Hart and her husband, Ray Hart, and the work that he does in India. And I was recently talking to them. He just got back from a trip in India, and he was resting, and he had some swelling in his legs and things when he was over there. And Sandy was telling me the other day that she, there in Wycliffe, she often works with people who are referred to her by the court system because of drug dependency and issues related to that. And she'll work with them there through the museum. And she said, this very issue is what she tries to help them understand, is that oftentimes they begin by talking about their dependency on drugs and alcohol in a way that makes them a victim, in a way that gives them excuses, in a way that causes them to realize they don't, or makes them think they don't have a choice. And she says, I begin by, you know, they want to tell me their story and go on and on about how all their circumstances are justified and how they deserve to be living this kind of life because of their background and things. And then she says, I will begin and I will share with them some of my story and some of the things I've been through. And then I talk to them about how they've got to change their attitude from thinking about excuses to thinking about accountability. From thinking about being a victim to thinking about being responsible. And that's exactly what Satan can do to us. He can take our disabilities and he can hold us bondage with them by our attitudes, by the way we talk about them, the way we think about them. And we need to come to Jesus, and we've got to understand that Jesus can set us free. He can loose us from those things. Turn to John chapter 8, because really all of our sin is a disability. In John 8, 31 through 36, Jesus says this, So Jesus said to the Jews who had believed on Him, If you abide in My word, You are truly my disciples. You will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. They answered him, We are the offspring of Abraham and have never been enslaved to anyone. How is it that you say you will become free? Jesus answered them, Truly, truly, I say to you, everyone who practices sin is a slave to sin. We are all bound by sin. We're all crippled by Satan. And then Jesus says, The slave does not remain in the house forever, but the son remains forever. So if the son sets you free, you will be free indeed. You see, Jesus says you can know the truth, and the truth will set you free. One of the lessons is that we can be like this woman. We can be set free. We can be loosed from our bondage, from our captivity, no matter how long Satan has kept us in it. He has the power to loose us. This evening, do you need to be set free? Do you need the release that Jesus offers? Imagine the feeling. Imagine the feeling. You know, I talked at the beginning about having a bad crick in your neck, and imagine, you know, once it's gone, or if you recover from surgery, and some people talk about when they have a bad debilitating back injury and they're in severe pain, and then they have a surgery, it's almost like immediate relief that the doctor gives them after that surgery. Think about this woman, 18 years of being bound, and then she's released, she's set free, she straightens up. Think about that feeling and what it feels like to be physically free. Now think about being set spiritually free and how that should be an even greater feeling in our hearts. If you need to respond to the Lord's invitation, come as together. We stand and sing.